Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Feeders Club is supported by its patrons at patreon.com/thefeedersclub. If you enjoy the show, please consider becoming a patron. This is episode 112 of The Feeders Club for July 2018, National Gradients of Outrage. And welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we get together with people from different countries, different cultures, different backgrounds, and we talk about the news that have been happening in the past month. Hopefully, you get some different perspectives on what you thought was definitive, and you are challenged in your ideas and opinions. A little bit, sometimes, maybe. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I'm very happy to be welcoming a full house to the Phileas Club. The club is full. There are no more seats. Five people on the show today. Myself, of course. I am currently living in Finland/France, but spending a little bit more time in Finland. So I hail from Europe. We also have Turkey, who is, of course, with us as almost every episode. He is from Saudi Arabia. How's it going, Turkey?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be talking to you, Patrick.
Are you saying this because I said you always sound asleep and bored before we started? You know, you're saying the words, but I somehow I'm still not convinced. Your tone doesn't convey it quite well. Say it again. Try it with a little bit more peps in your voice.
Clearly, you do not understand sarcasm.
That is true, but thankfully you have that in spades to educate me.
Honestly, I love you, Patrick. Seriously.
I do too. We also have...
You love yourself.
Yes, exactly. That's what I meant. We heard the voice of Bruce, who is hailing from Scotland without the accent. What's that about?
Well, I'm a Zimbabwean in Scotland, so there we go.
Yeah.
I don't really have a Zimbabwean accent anyway, but I'm okay. It's good.
Yeah,
to be here.
I feel a little bit cheated. I was expecting a little bit more of a colorful accent to invade the show. You've been on the show before, so I knew what to expect.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
We will give you a pass for this time. So Zimbabwean slash. Well, really, do you still keep up with what's happening in Zimbabwe? Do you go back?
I do. It's actually one of the things I wanted to mention today. Well, if we've got time, but yeah, I still keep up with it. So
excellent. Mm-hmm. Perfect. We also are very happy to be welcoming back Tony from the US. How's it going, Tony?
It's going very well, thank you. This is the best way to start my work day is talking to you guys, and I will try to, if I make any jokes, clearly state that they are such before making them today.
Okay, excellent. I'm not sure why you're saying this specifically. Did we make...
No, that's a reference to one of the latest big things in the United States, the joke video that was seen as fake news.
Okay, all right. Well, I didn't see that one. I'm sure we'll have fun talking about that one. And as I mentioned, you're from the U.S. So you're on the Eastern time, but as you mentioned very clearly before we started recording, you are not from the East Coast. You are from Ohio, proud Ohioan. Is that?
Ohioan, yes.
Ohioan. And yes, you are not to be confused with those East Coasters, which I understand because, you know, they're all Tony Soprano type mafia people. So I get why you wouldn't want to be associated with them. And speaking of, we are also welcoming a newcomer on the show, another American, Bill Bird Are you, you're from the East Coast. Are you one of those mafia types or not?
Not in the last year. I've resigned. We call ourselves East Coast here in the Philadelphia area, even though we get in our cars and drive over an hour to get to the beach. So take it the way you like.
Excellent. Well, I'm very glad to be welcoming you. You are, I think, the only grandfather we've ever had on the show. I'm not sure, but I think you're the only one. Can you tell a few words about yourself? The others have been on the show before. I think many of the listeners know more or less where they're coming from. Bill, it's your first time. Could you let the audience know a little bit about yourself so they have some context?
Sure. Well, as a grandfather, let me start by saying, get off my lawn.
Duly noted. Duly noted, yeah.
Okay. I was born in New York City and raised there for a number of years, where I took part in the duck and cover air raid drills, where you were instructed to in school to get on the floor, get your head under the desk and your bottom to the window. But I've lived in the Philadelphia area for the last 40 years. As you implied, I'm not only a grandfather, but a husband and a father and a software developer. I've, like a lot of Americans, I've become a compulsive consumer of news in the last 2 years. But I'm also interested in history, tech, books, way too much TV and movies. Fitting with the stereotype, I'm not a gamer, and I gave up comic books when I was 40.
Ah, so when you were really young then. I'm 40 now, so, right. I mean, 45, but in my 40s.
40-ish, 40 adjacent. Yeah, they were piling up faster than I was reading them, and so I had a moment of sanity.
Yeah, I can understand that. There are some pretty good ones nowadays, though. I'll give you a couple of recommendations on things you can get back into. All right. Well, thanks to all of you for being on the show. As always, what we do on the show is that we go over each guest and we get a feel for what has been important in their part of the world over the last few weeks. And we try to discuss it. It's very simple. And for me, I guess I'm going to not break tradition and start. I'm going to be talking about something that has been happening in France. And I'm very curious to hear, maybe if you've had, if you've heard about it, I think maybe not, but what you think about it on face value. Because it's quite a scandal. And it's been making the news for the past couple of weeks in somewhat dramatic fashion. So I'm going to try to summarize what happened, and I'm sorry if I get some small elements wrong, but overall you should get the gist. So over Labor Day on the 1st of May, we always have demonstrations in the country for, you know, celebrating the rights of the workers. And that's something that's been happening for a very long time. It's usually fairly accepted, there are no major incidents. Maybe sometimes there are some things that happen on the fringe, but generally it goes rather well because it's not necessarily against the government. It's more a celebration of the workers' rights. Of course, you know, some people always say the government is fighting against those rights, but it doesn't usually deter in anything resembling riots or anything like that. So this time it didn't either, actually, but it happened on the 1st of May as usual. And a few days ago, maybe a week ago, so 2.5 months afterwards, there is a video that surfaced that showed someone mistreating a someone who was demonstrating, or that's not completely clear. Maybe it was even just a passerby. They grabbed a woman, dragged her to the side. Oh, I'm saying someone. They were wearing a police... how do you call it? The thing you put on your arm. I can't remember the name in English. Like a little band of fabric that you put on your arm to indicate...
Armband.
An armband. There you go. So they were wearing a police armband and a riot police helmet. And so, you know, it was kind of assumed that he was part of the police. So he dragged a woman to the side, hit her a few times, then rushes to another man that was closer to the riot police and grabs them and starts hitting them as well. And that person, it turns out, is an advisor to the president, President Macron. He's an advisor. Well, he's like a bodyguard. It's not completely clear what he does, but he works with the office of the president's chief of staff and has the status of like advisor slash bodyguard. And of course, he is not a policeman. He's not part of the riot police. And so it's basically an advisor to the president who goes to a peaceful demonstration, puts on a riot police helmet and signs of being a police person, and violently attacking people. And we discovered, thanks to the work of one of our national newspapers, that he did that and who he was, and that for this, his hierarchy basically suspended him for 2 weeks. And that was it. So already that sparked outrage. What was he doing wearing those things? It was explained later that he requested to be present to observe how those operations go, which is not uncommon. But of course, he didn't have the authorization to take part. Obviously, he's not a police officer. And he didn't have the authorization to take part. But that's only the starting point, because as people dug more and more into his past, we realized that he was violent before and in other occasions. He had other perks that he's not supposed to have, like a state owned car that was outfitted with police lights. He has a pass that allows him to go into the parliament where no one else is supposed to go, and like only the highest officials have the right to go. No one has the pass and is the envy of everyone. And no one quite knows exactly who the guy is and why he has all of those things. He is clear. It's not like he's some kind of embedded Secret Service agent, or at least it would be very strange that he would behave like this. He has a history of being a bodyguard. He has falsified his resume. And the most damning thing, which made this into more than just a scandal that would have been acted on quickly, was the fact that his hierarchy knew about the video, and they only decided it was appropriate to suspend him for a couple of weeks. We're getting parliamentary hearings on this. We're getting more and more revelations. And finally, a couple of days ago, President Macron, who was basically walling himself into silence, not addressing any of the issue, was forced to come out and say things. And what he said was, "I'm the only person responsible," kind of making a show of strength. But at the same time, he was taking on responsibility on himself, so making it seem like he was a good leader. But he also can't really be held accountable, because obviously he's the president, and short of what would be the equivalent of an impeachment, which obviously is not going to happen for this, there aren't going to be consequences on him. The guy, Benalla is his name, has been now fired and has been arraigned. He's going to be prosecuted. A couple of other people that are involved are going to be prosecuted. The big question is now what's going to be happening to his hierarchy. Mainly his direct manager, the chief of staff. I personally would think something should be done, if only an administrative measure of, you know, a warning or something symbolic, but something should be done. Very upset by all of this. And it is probably beyond all of the political disagreements that France has with each other and the government, which always happens. This is probably what has been the most impactful thing that happened since the beginning of the Macron government. It's almost universally considered a black eye in the government's face. So yeah, this is the story, kind of unexpected. It was really a WTF moment. When you see the video, it is unsettling and upsetting. And yeah, so this is where we stand now. Have any of you heard about this, or is it only making the news in France?
No.
I have to say I haven't heard of it either.
Okay. Yeah, that's always interesting when it doesn't make the news. You know,
I heard of it, and I think you guys are just crybabies.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Okay, I'm never sure if you're being ironic now, because obviously I don't know what irony is. Why would you say we're crybabies? Why would you say we're crybabies?
Move to the Middle East. Move to the Middle East.
Oh, right. You mean that kind of thing happens all the time. Well, I mean...
And seriously, guys. So, you found out, you arrested the guy, you open an investigation. End of story. Move along.
Well, the thing is...
It's not like it was a year ago and you just figured it out. So it's a huge scandal. It's something that's been happening for a while. It's been a year since it happened. Like, it didn't take long for you to find out and act on it. So
move on. But you know, the key issue here is that the president and the chief of staff and the president knew about it, and the consequence was only 2 weeks suspension. And I think that is a sticking point. If they hadn't known, it would have been a different story. If they found out, fired him, fine, it's not a big deal. But what makes this into a state issue is the fact that they knew and they chose to only suspend him for 2 weeks. Wouldn't that be more problematic, even in, you know, other Middle Eastern countries?
No, the fact that they gave the order, yes.
If they what, sorry?
Gave the order, yes.
You mean the order for him to go in and hit people?
Yeah. If he was ordered to do that, that's a different situation. They found out, they thought this is what it should be. They were wrong in their reaction, but... End of story. It's not like, did they try to hide it? If they tried to deliberately to hide it, then yes, that's a big deal.
Yeah, they didn't. I don't think. I mean, there's the question of whether or not they should have informed the judiciary. That is another question. The judiciary wasn't informed, and that might be something that they failed to do when they should have. They didn't
If they broke the law and they were required to inform the judiciary, yes, I agree. Then they did something. If the law doesn't make them have to inform them, then they didn't do anything wrong.
I guess that's one way to look at it. What about, I don't know, let's go to Tony. What do you think about this story? How would it play out in the US, or what do you think the appropriate reaction would be?
I think it would play out in a very similar manner. I'm kind of with Turkey on that. It seems almost like, I don't want to say a non-story, because the initial story itself certainly would have been a story, but I think it would have played out exactly the same. They would have set forth some punishment. It would have been too light. Everyone would have blown up about it, and then they would have made the real punishment, and then the next day they would have moved on to something else to complain about. So I'm kind of with him that this is kind of, I feel like it's probably gone the way it should have gone. Now, yeah, you can say they should have fired him right away, but it happens all the time here that, you know, they're going to make some pronouncement and it's not going to be enough and the public's going to be outraged. So then they go as far as they probably should have to begin with. So, but yeah, when I was listening to your story, I was thinking, I don't think he's going to get very many differing opinions on this. I mean, I think that we probably are all in agreement that the guy did something he shouldn't have done, and they responded maybe a little lax to begin with, but then they took the appropriate measures in the end.
Interesting. It's funny because, you know, there's a famous story about, I think, someone in Finland, that a government official, maybe a minister of some kind, that used their government credit card to buy a couple of candy bars. Maybe it was in Sweden. It was one of the two. They bought a couple of candy bars. That created such a scandal that they ultimately had to resign because they used the government funds to buy something for their personal use.
Have you heard of Scott Pruitt?
The what, sorry?
Have you heard of Scott Pruitt?
I know the name. I'm not sure exactly what he did wrong.
He is the recently resigned and massively corrupt head of the Environmental Protection Agency who spent money wildly on himself and abused his position in every way. And it took many months to get him to resign.
You know, it's funny because it seems that it really is a question of gradients. And in the north, where I am now, in Finland, Sweden, the Nordic countries, if you step out just a little bit, it's like you're out. In my original country, in France, I mean, something like this story is considered a major scandal. It might not, you know, it's not like the chief of staff is going to resign or anything like that. The story is kind of being put to bed unless something incredible happens in the next few weeks on the, you know, news scandal. It's being put to bed. There are probably going to be some additional results of the inquiries, but nothing major, it seems. But we're still taking it pretty seriously, and we're upset more than anything. And it seems that you guys in the US, it takes a lot, and maybe in Saudi Arabia as well, it takes a lot more even to make you angry. I'm starting to wonder if you're not like those dirty Italians, that there is not an Italian here to defend them, so I can say whatever I want.
My mom's Italian, so...
Okay, there you go, so you can defend them. But you know...
She's from the north of Italy, so it's not Sicilian, so...
Okay, the north is better than the south. The south of Italy, don't get me started. But yeah, there's a lot more, like... There's a lot more shrugging off, like...
You're going to get so many emails, Patrick.
hey, Patrick, if I may... Sure. I don't know that we're shrugging it off. I think the actual event... If that had happened here, if, say, one of Trump's Secret Service members had gone out into a protest and started beating people, the public at large, at least the left side, would be calling for Trump's head. They would be calling for it for certain. So I think the outrage from the opponents of the president would probably be higher than what you're experiencing. They'd still be yelling for it. However, I think what I was trying to convey was it seems like things went eventually the appropriate way with what you're saying.
It's being dealt with.
Can we all agree that the guy with the candy bars, that might have been a little bit too much to resign over two candy bars?
Yes, I think we would all agree.
Yep.
But, you know, in Nordic countries, you don't mess around with this. And I think it kind of follows that the stricter you are, especially with government finances and government, the attitude towards the public property, which, you know, they're being paid with our money. I think it's linked as well to the way you view your relationship to your country's government. I think in France, we're kind of in the middle ground and people try to cheat, you know, on some taxes. You don't declare something or you try to get out of a ticket or it doesn't really matter. And so it kind of permeates society that if you skim a little bit on the side, it's not the end of the world. We're trying to fight it here very actively, and I think it's getting better on all levels. I'm including governments in there. But I think it the little guy has the same attitude, just at a smaller scale. So in the Nordic countries, of course, you always have people who try to cheat their way into not paying some taxes, but I think it's a lot less the case. So it's not just the governments that... are part of it, and our attitude, even in France, sometimes we hear about something and they're like, yeah, okay, whatever, it's not a big deal, where in the Nordic countries, they would have been outraged. So I think there is something similar here with this issue, which is being, yes, it was handled, yes, it was, you know, dealt with appropriately, it seems, finally, and yes, it's going to be put to rest, I'm guessing, but it will remain, you know, it did affect the standing of the government, I think. Even, just to be transparent, I voted for Macron. I might not have been entirely satisfied with the result, but this actually affected me, I think, more than some other things. So, anyway.
I find it funny because growing up in Zimbabwe, riot police pretty much had free will to do whatever they wanted. So I was just watching the video there, and you say it's quite violent. Yeah, but that sort of thing we were, you know, we grew up with happening, and it was never the fact that people got video taking it and that people are in trouble about it is quite funny, actually. It's not funny, but it's almost like I'm thinking first world problems here. You know, people get beaten up by the police all the time and by government officials.
Just to be clear, Bruce, it happens here too. Sometimes riot police has to break up a demonstration that's getting violent, and they do get violent. The big issue here is the dude isn't a policeman. He's just a random government attaché who just decides to go in the street, put on a helmet, and beat on people. You know, that is what makes it different.
Yeah, Ben? And that in the U.S., impersonating a police officer, because of all the rights that police have to maintain order, and I'm doing air quotes here, that is taken very seriously, whether you're connected or not. You go out and misbehave while impersonating a police officer, you're facing problems.
Well, here too, and that's the problem. You know, that's here as well. If you do that, you should be facing very serious trouble. And the fact that, I think maybe we're getting to the reason why this is upsetting so many people, you are supposed to not be allowed to do this. And the fact that the chief of staff and the president heard about it and were like, we'll just suspend him for a couple of weeks, is like, what are you doing? This is bad. This is not something, and it kind of leads to, if you're not disturbed by this and just go like, well, a couple of weeks is fine, what else are you not upset about, you know?
I think we're disappointing you in our level of upset because you asked how it would go, not how it should go in our country.
I guess maybe it would go the same way. I guess the question would have been better asked with, would there have been, would it upset you in the same manner? And Tony, I think you also pointed out something that is really interesting. You're saying the outrage would be higher, especially on the opposing side of the political spectrum to the government. I think whichever government it was, it's a special case with Trump now, but it would have been the same case no matter what. And here, while the opposing parties are very much taking advantage of the story to kind of, you know, create hashtags with Benalla Macron, associating the president with the dude in the scandal, which I understand why, they're not calling for the head of the president. You know, they are being a little bit extreme in the way they're portraying this and kind of drumming up the beats of outrage, but they're not like, oh, what are you doing? Impeachment, like vote him out or like resign today, you know, nothing like this. So, I don't know. Maybe there's a little bit more. I think they're a little bit pushing it, but at the same time, I understand they're not as outrageous as they might be in the U.S., maybe. I don't know.
Well, in the U.S., regardless of which party is in power, the other party would be yelling and screaming, but I don't think they'd be calling for the resignation of the president in either case.
Maybe not, yeah. All right, well, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about the U.S. I did want to ask both of you guys about what seemed to me like the biggest story over the past few weeks, which was Trump's trip to Russia.
Helsinki.
And, well, Helsinki. Yeah, to Helsinki. Yeah, obviously. Sorry. And the fact that, I mean, for the first time, when looking at it from here, from Europe, I think what I saw was outrage about his non-strength towards Putin and basically his not calling him out on anything and not denouncing, but not acknowledging the conclusions of your secret information agencies that Russia did meddle in the election. I've seen outrage on both sides of the aisle, which is, I think, unprecedented since the beginning of his presidency. I've seen, my impression at least, was a lot of people from the Republican Party also were saying that this was unpatriotic and that it calling Trump out for his behavior there. Tony, you're more on the right side of things here. How did you see it? What do you think of what happened there, or if you care at all? But what did you think?
Yeah, I care. I didn't like what he said, especially I think Trump's style of diplomacy, if you want to call it that, is the flattery, butter him up style in person. That's his style. That's his business style. That's his diplomacy style. However, I think he went over where he should have when he said that he didn't see why it would have been Russia. So he went against what basically all of our intelligence services have said, that Russia meddled in the election and he didn't see why it would have been them. Now, of course, he walked that back, which kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. You say something and then there's outrage and then you walk it back. So he went back the next day and said, oh, I meant I didn't see why it wouldn't have been Russia, which I don't think anyone actually believes that's what he meant to say. I'm not him. I can't speak for him. I have my suspicions as to why he went that route. And the suspicions that I have are he doesn't believe that Russian meddling caused him to win the election. Therefore, he wants to throw doubt on whether they even meddled, because there are some who absolutely believe that Russian meddling caused him to win the election. So rather than he's so prideful and narcissistic that rather than say, yes, they meddled, but I won the election fair and square, he says, well, they didn't meddle, or there may have been some other meddling, or that guy in the basement may have been meddling as well, just to throw doubt on that. So that's my suspicion on why he's doing that. But I certainly didn't like that he said that. I thought that it put doubt on our intelligence agencies, although now looking at it, I don't think it did, because I think most everyone believes that they did meddle, even the supporters. They believe that Russia meddled with the election.
Oh, I disagree. I think there is that hardcore of Trump support that he never falls beneath, that pretty much believes what they see from Trump and Fox News. And even as he was walking it back the next day, he read that ransom note. He's Trump being Trump. He veered off script and says, or it could have been other people. There's a lot of people out there. He could not stick to the script. And so I don't think that it's his pride in victory, because even as he's saying he believes the intelligence services, he's saying other people could have been meddling, which undoes that point.
Does it, Tony, I'll finish with this question and then go back to Bill. Does it alter the way you view, I don't just want to say Trump, because I think every time you're on the show, we kind of ask if it changes your view on Trump, and your response, I think, is invariably, well, I already thought he was an idiot. Does it push it to did it break? I don't know how to phrase it. Did it change something key in the way you view him, or is just power for the course?
No, I don't think it changed how I view him. I haven't been on the show in a while, so you haven't had the opportunity to ask me lately my views on Trump. I've gone up and down the last few months, but it's what's expected to me. I mean, I expect him to say something completely ridiculous that's going to be self-serving, and then I expect his administration to follow that up with a really good policy. Now, there's been a couple of exceptions to that, but for the most part, regardless of what he says, I feel like his administration is working independently of what he's saying. And that's a good thing, because his administration is putting forth what I consider to be good policies, whereas what he's saying is ridiculous.
Okay, that's a bit scary, but I guess it is a special case with Trump. Hopefully it is something that is not likely to happen again. The idea that the administration is working independently of what Trump is saying or doing, the president is saying.
I say that, Patrick, but I think that they're working toward his goals. I think that he just doesn't think about what he says or tweets, and he just runs his mouth. But I think his goals are established, and I do think the administration is working toward his goals just in a better way than he could do, especially if he had to talk about it.
Okay, I don't know if that reassured me a lot, but yeah, I get what you mean. Bill, what about you? What about the way you view this whole Helsinki trip?
Well, this is Trump as he has been for 2 years, and to everyone who thought that once in office, after they voted for him, that he would pivot and become presidential, what does Nelson say? Ha ha! He has not done that.
Well, I guess, yeah, that we knew. It's been 2 years, as you said, yeah.
He appeared very submissive next to Putin, and that worried a lot of people. There was not a lot of upset on both sides. You know, you got to watch out when anyone says both sides in describing the U.S. There was a lot of upset on the left, and there was concern on the right. If you look at what politicians on the Republican side said, they're concerned. They find it concerning. A few of them went further, very few. But meanwhile, they still blocked an attempt by the Senate to get the interpreter, who was the only other American in the room, to come and testify before Congress.
Isn't that illegal, by the way? Shouldn't those things... I'm not sure, but it seems like that is not the way it is usually done. Maybe I'm mistaken.
You mean it should be illegal to have the interpreter breach confidence?
No, I mean, isn't there some kind of public record necessity of what happens there, even if it's classified and only declassified much later?
That is true of written materials and even emails, as a lot of people have found to their dismay. but spoken words, not so much.
Okay.
If they are, someone was taking notes, that would be subpoena a bolt, to coin an awful word.
Right.
So the Republicans are acting as enablers to Trump. And that worries a lot of people. Tony says his administration is moving forward on his goals. In a lot of cases, that's true. And in a lot of cases, those goals are the same as any Republican would have, getting control in Washington. Strip down administration, administrative rules, get rid of regulations that protect the environment and health. Cut taxes. These are standard Republican goals for a generation. The intelligence community.
That's not Trump. I think you're right, and your political preferences are showing a little bit here. Although I think you're being somewhat factual. But this is just, if it wasn't Trump that was in office, it would be the same. Right.
Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, any of the others would be pursuing exactly the same policies with, I won't say more finesse, but I'll say less insanity than
less
Trump has pursued.
On Twitter.
He is America's first jazz president. He's winging it all the time.
All right.
So, yeah, that's.
But it doesn't seem sorry, go ahead. Finish up.
It was Trump's submissiveness to Putin that raises the question, what does Putin have on him? And that ranges from one extreme to, oh, it's just Trump admires dictators, as he's shown with Duterte and I forget the guy in Turkey and China president for life and all the rest of them.
Are you playing with a lighter or something? We can hear it on the... Mike.
Oh my God, I'm flicking a pen. I'm sorry. Wow, that's a good mic. So it ranges from that to the famous P tape, with many gradations in between on what Putin might have on Trump.
Oh, the P tape, yeah. We're hearing about the lawyers paying someone to not talk about some affair he had, stuff like that as well. I guess that's, I mean,
there's a lot of that, and it oddly enough crosses our campaign laws, which we apparently still have a few, that would be an illegal contribution to his campaign if it was intended to benefit his election prospects.
All right. Tony, do you keep an eye on those? I mean, you're a Christian person. Things like affairs and things like that are run contrary to the image of the GOP, you know, Christian values, all of that. And I'm guessing you're not a big fan of the idea. Does it still fall into the, well, you know, Trump's an idiot anyway. It's not like I respect the guy to begin with, or does it concern you more?
Well, I mean, that everyone knew that's who Trump was. I don't even understand why he would waste the money trying to cover up an affair. That's not something that no one thought he was squeaky clean as far as womanizing. Everyone in the country knew that he's been a womanizer for many, many years. He said, you know, he did not go to Vietnam because of some minor health thing. I can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe a bone spur.
Bone spurs, yes.
Yeah, yes. But he's quoted as saying that STDs in the 70s were his personal Vietnam. So I think we all knew what, as far as marital fidelity, every wife that he's had was his mistress prior to being his wife, except, of course, the first one. So that's nothing new. Of course, yes, that's not something that I approve of personally, but I mean, that doesn't change the equation. That was known prior.
You know, it's funny. Every time I discuss Trump with people who don't understand the people who voted for Trump or who support Trump, maybe exception made of the hardcore support portion of the American public, which, as Bill said, exists and will never, you know, think ill of anything he does. A lot of people keep saying, oh my God, do you see what Trump did? Doesn't that change your opinion? And it, like, some magically, for some reason, people didn't realize. And most people who don't support Trump, but tolerate him for other reasons with other goals, the response, not just from you, Tony, but in general, is invariably, yeah, we know. Like, not we know because we heard about it now. It's like, of course, who did you think the guy was? We knew from the get-go. So I think that's a big disconnect. Some people think, oh, well, once we realize this, obviously you can't support him anymore. But when you put it like this, Tony, it's like, yeah, he cheated on his wife all the time. It's not news to him. And if we're being fair, it's not news to the people who are being outraged now. The campaign contribution might be another part of it, but it's not the real reason for the outrage. So anyway, I think that view on it is really interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say yes. And one thing that Bill said about any Republican being in the same place, except with more finesse or however he put it, I agree. And as we've stated on this show before, Trump was not my first choice. He was not my choice in the primary. So I would have loved to have had a Pence or a Cruz in the leadership role right now.
Yeah, but as we were saying, it wouldn't have changed the policies. It would have changed the Twitter antics, which are concerning in their own right. But yeah, it wouldn't have changed the policies that would have been, upsetting to the left anyway.
Let me amend that, Patrick. Mm-hmm. The main policies that I mentioned, yes, would be the same. I don't think a Ted Cruz or a Mike Pence would have embarked on trade wars with our allies or attacking the EU or NATO.
I don't see that as
part of the standard Republican.
The trade wars.
Yeah. I think in doing these things, he is following Putin's line. And that is not the same as the standard Republican line in the U.S. That's something new.
I was going to say that just, sorry, Tony, just to jump in, that one of the things that I have to agree with Bill is that the rest of the world is looking on, and any other Republican leader, we would have said, well, it's just, you know, it's America and you're following your own things. But he's doing some stuff that the rest of the world's looking at and thinking, America's going down the drain. You know, we don't, nobody respects Trump. Nobody that I speak to outside the UK, they think he's getting stuff done, but they think he's an idiot if they do like him. And what we're left, what America's left with now is no friends and sitting in a corner with a MAGA hat on. That's the way I see it. I don't know.
Last week on a British television show, a British conservative member of parliament called Trump a dickhead and said she was looking forward to America getting rid of him and getting back to normal. And I think, of course, we all hope.
That is one thing I wanted to get to, which is how the rest of the world, viewed this, and especially the Helsinki trip. I think Bruce put it well. It is not just a facepalm, it's facepalm city. However much we explain and you know, detail the reasoning of how and why it doesn't really affect this all that much, or how we knew whatever was happening, if you get out of the US and don't get involved into their internal reasons for whatever, you know, for why they're doing what, that especially meeting with Putin was, because we've all commented on Trump before, but that was shaking of your head and going like, what is he doing? And the image on the effect on the image of the US is not, it's not just a detail. It does have immense ramifications in you know, standing and desire to work with and inspiration, and it's really starting to affect, I guess it's to be expected, the more it goes on, the more it affects the image of the US. But this in particular was, all right, he's just not even trying with Putin. He's just laying down. He felt like a dog being, you know, laying down before its master. That's what
you could see it in his. You could see it in his body language. His shoulders were slumped. And normally, he's swaggering and he's got his chest thrust out. There were reports that he came out of that press conference thinking he had done terrifically.
And you know, who knows? Maybe, I hesitate to say it, maybe he's a genius and he's playing Putin. I don't think so, but maybe. But the bottom line is, from France, from Finland, there was a definite break in, like, it was kind of, you know, well, he's a clown, but he's boasting, he's doing this, he's doing that. What this meeting was, well, he can't even pretend to make a point about being strong with Putin. He just laid down, and essentially there's nothing he personally can do. So this is a huge black eye on the US's face. Bruce, I think you expressed your opinion on this, or maybe the image of that this gave in Scotland. I want to turn to Turkey, but anything to add on how you saw that Helsinki meeting in your country?
I think you pretty much summed it up there. It's just the other thing with Trump in Scotland is that he's not been liked for a long, long time here. he's got golf courses here, and he's run roughshod over local communities, and he's made a lot of enemies. So, you know, I can say Scotland hated Trump before it was cool. So you're not going to find many people who are very positive about him here. And the big baby blimp. I don't know if you heard about that. That was up in London when it came to, but it made its way to Edinburgh too, and there were many people celebrating it. And you know, a part of me thinks it's a bit childish, but a part of me thinks, well, you know, this is what it's led to. So yeah. I guess I'd just back up what you say. You know, he's kind of breaking the camel's back with his idiocy.
And I think it's important to emphasize, even though we've done it already quite a bit, but this last one was the chance for him to be the boastful, maybe even a little bit a childish / irrational person that he is during the thing, and saying something, you know, one thing, anything, it during the meeting. And the fact that he said nothing is like, well, he can't do anything then. The only thing he can do is be idiotic on Twitter, right? And again, maybe Tony and his supporters are like, yes, we know. That's what we kept telling you. But I don't know. For us, it was like, all right, well, then you're, you know, raising your arms and going like, all right, fine, I give up, whatever. The U.S. is that.
Everyone in the U.S. is always wondering whether the latest thing is the straw that breaks the camel's back of his support. And this one looked like it might be, but I think we're seeing that it's not. But I would say, even though Trump just tweeted yesterday bragging about his approval rating among Republicans, which is in the upper 80 percentile, I think. But the Republicans are shrinking in numbers, self-declared Republicans. There's fewer of them than there used to be. It's not huge, but that's the way things are going. He's got a hard core of support, but Trump himself is always working to erode that around the edges.
Turkey, what about Saudi Arabia? Anything to say about that meeting?
Well, let's start with, for God's sake, I'm tired of this guy.
Fair enough.
And no, there's not much help from Saudi Arabia or the region in general. There's not much about it because clearly Trump is with the regional governments in this area. He's very popular. So not a lot of criticism comes out in the media in the region in general.
That is also fair enough. All right. I guess that's pretty clear. Okay. As always, we spend too much time on Trump. Tony, what is the thing that made the news apart from Trump in recent weeks?
Well, the thing that I found very interesting was Nikki Haley, who is our ambassador to the UN and also would probably be someone I would vote for president someday. Was speaking to a Turning Point USA conference, which that is a very conservative youth organization. It was a bunch of high school students who are extremely conservative. And she, you all may have heard of this. She got up in front of them and she said, raise your hand if you've posted anything to Own the Libs. And every kid in the place raised their hand, and then she went on to explain to them why that was silly and they shouldn't do it, and why just triggering the libs isn't helpful, but having an actual discussion, because you're not going to convince anybody of your side when you're just going out there to quote unquote own the libs or own the cons. But we need to be working to discuss with the other side, meet in the middle, and find a way to make improvements. And I really respected what she said. I thought it was great. And it's a point of sanity in the insanity that is our social media system right now.
That she sounds wonderful.
She is wonderful, in my opinion. Now, she's very conservative, but she is, I believe, at least half Indian, as in the country of India, not Native American.
Mm-hmm. I think her ancestry is fully Indian, but I'm not positive.
Is it fully? Okay, her I wasn't
ancestry.
Sure. Yeah.
She's so, American.
She is American, but her, So she was the governor of South Carolina.
I think it's fair to say, especially to people who aren't from the U.S., bringing up the fact that she's of Indian origin, when you're talking about a conservative especially, is very fair. And I think it's an important piece of information. So, yeah.
Well, it's part of her. You know, yeah, it's part of who she is. Yeah. So
why is that very fair? You do realize that a lot of majority of Indians in the U.S. are conservatives.
Well, I didn't, but
I didn't realize that either. Actually, I hadn't
yeah,
really
a lot of them voted for Trump. They are a very conservative community, the Indians.
Oh, there you go.
That's interesting. But she was the governor of South Carolina, and Trump made her the ambassador to the UN, and I fully expect her to eventually make a run for the president, and I would probably support her.
How conservative? It's she, I mean.
Pro-life,
anti-climate change.
I believe she's pro-life. I don't know her stance on climate change, although I'm conservative and I believe that climate change is the thing. So, you know, sometimes you might expect me to be full on. I don't want to say far right. That definitely has a negative connotation, but very conservative. And sometimes you find that I lean toward the middle, but I don't know her stance on that. I believe she is pro-life, and most of the fiscal conservative issues, she's conservative on.
Okay. Bill, what about yourself? Would you consider this was a big... Oh, by the way, do you think... Was this... received in a negative way in any sense? Was there some controversy on this? It would seem like it's an incredibly reasonable thing to say, and even the people on the left would be like, see, yes, this is how we should be, even if she is very conservative.
I didn't hear left responses, but a lot of the conservative commentators were on her side in this. It does seem to be a trend on both sides, but definitely among younger conservatives, that they're just going out there on Twitter trying to trigger the other side, and that's not helpful.
I was hoping for a second you were going to say it seems to be a trend, especially with younger people, that they're trying to be constructive rather than trollish. And I guess, yeah, maybe we don't live in that world yet at some point.
Exactly.
Bill, what about yourself? Anything to add on that story, or maybe one of your own?
You know, I've always got something.
Okay.
On that story, although I'm not a big fan of Nikki Haley because she represents all those same policies that I view as bad, I will say that when she was governor of South Carolina a couple of years ago, she took down the Confederate battle flag from the state capitol grounds. And I believe this may have been after a Confederate-oriented gunman shot up a dozen people in a church. But nevertheless, there was some opposition, and I think it took some political bravery on her part to take that flag down. So she is far from the worst. I'll agree. That's not actually agreeing with Tony. But in another story in that same vein, there is a bipartisan group of representatives in the House of Representatives who use the pompous name Problem Solvers Caucus. And these are moderates who would like to push things back toward the center and in from the fringes. They have come up with some proposals they think would drive in that direction and reduce the power, particularly of the Freedom Caucus, which is a really far right group that has held, despite their numbers of about 30 or 40 out of 435, they have had a way out of balance control over the House of Representatives in recent years. And this move would help to restrict their power. So that could be a good thing.
So let me ask you this. It seems like both stories are trying to emphasize or encourage a more constructive view on politics. Do you guys feel, and I'm going to ask actually the whole panel, including Turkey and Bruce, do you guys feel like we're seeing maybe the beginnings of a reaction to the craziness that's been happening over the past few years? And maybe some people are starting to crystallize that sentiment that, all right, this isn't helpful, or are these fringe elements that it's not a generalized feeling, or even starting to become a generalized feeling? Well, first, let's ask Tony.
So I think that there's definitely a reaction to the extremes. I also think that it's very fringe at this point. It seems that both sides are going more extreme at times.
And Bill, that helps. You're playing with your pen again.
Oh, sorry.
That seems to be what gets people elected in the primaries. And you can just look at the left's new darling by some accounts, by some not so much.
Oh, come on, Tony.
I'm going to say it. She's a big deal right now. Everyone's talking about her. And
that's not the same as saying she's a darling.
Well, I mean, she...
Who is she?
Her name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She beat the what was perceived, and Bill, I'm assuming you're a Democrat, so feel free to correct me if I say something that's incorrect, because I don't know his name off the top of my head.
Crowley.
The guy, right? Crowley. Yeah, he was seen by many as the successor to Nancy Pelosi as the minority or majority leader, depending on how the elections go. For the Democrats, and she beat him in his district. It seems to me that she beat him because very few people showed up to vote. Maybe the assumption was kind of like the assumption in the presidential election last time, that who cares, our guy's going to win, but he didn't. And now she's all over the place. So maybe darling was a little hyperbolic, but she is certainly in the limelight right now. And
so who is she? Is she, a pinko nut job, or what's her?
She is a young, attractive Hispanic woman whose positions are to the left, and she is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, which, of course, that word just sends people off the deep end. But she ran on a very liberal platform and beat an incumbent who's been there for 20 years.
Yeah, it simple, Patrick. It's someone you would love.
Maybe.
American social. I'd like to draw a distinction, though. We're talking about extremes. Extremes in ideology are fair game. The Republican Party moved much further to the right than the Democrats are showing any sign of moving to the left, even now, when I think I would agree with Tony that there is a big move within the Democratic base to move to the left. It's going nowhere near as far left as the Republicans have gone right in the last generation.
Just a second. Let me ask Tony if that would be his assessment as well.
Partially. I think there is some truth to that. What I think that the clarification that needs to be made is the Republicans definitely moved far to the right, but since about 2010, they've kind of their policies have stagnated, that they've stopped moving to the right. Maybe
there's nowhere else to go.
Getting ready to say that, Bill. But they have really kind of hit their place. Whereas the Democrats, especially amongst their base, have seemed to move farther to the left since that time. So they're traveling left, whereas the Republicans are parked.
Right. So maybe they have a little bit of a delay. They're traveling.
Distinction.
I would agree.
Let me draw a distinction between the politics and the atmosphere. You can have extremes of politics without having the insane discussion that we've had in this country for the, I don't know, however long it's been. You can be left, you can be right, and still be polite. We are not seeing, particularly on the right, any sign of manners, shame, or respect for the truth. Whereas, well, or as somebody put it, the Republicans treat politics like a back alley knife fight, but Democrats are expected to be behave as though they're at a garden party.
And I think that you may be looking at it through the lens of the Democrat side, just because I look at it through the lens of the Republican side, and we feel the same way, except reversed.
We're
biased, and I think that we could probably both admit that we're biased.
I have a bias.
Yeah, I think everyone's biased. Anyway, all right.
What?
But I would still stick to my point about politeness, and that's where we need to move. We may not make a lot of progress on the other stuff, but the rhetoric really needs to be dialed back.
That I think we can all agree on. There you go. But so to sum up the answer to my question of, are people starting to see the beginnings of reaction to the hyperbole and the, you know, owning the Dems or owning the cons attitude, I guess your answer is, yeah, not really. Those are exceptions.
My answer is, I hope you're right. It could be, but it's too early to say.
Okay.
Yeah, how would you wait for November?
Yeah, that's probably going to be an interesting... Well, I mean, until Trump is out of office, it nothing really counts, I feel. So, I don't know. We'll see. All right, we spent too much time on the U.S. as usual. How about Scotland? What's happening in the country of... Is it Scotland where there's lots of sheep? Or Ireland? I can never make...
That would be Wales.
Oh, Wales.
Wales have got all the sheep, yes.
All right, fair enough. So what do you have?
Well, they're the fourth one after England, I suppose. Wow, who's fourth?
Well,
wow.
England has gotten to the bottom of the list for me now. I mean, you know, with Brexit and everything. So anyway, keep going.
The big news, I suppose, for us is always Brexit, Brexit, Brexit. That's what keeps happening. There was, I don't know, mentioned on one of your recent shows, but there's been the David Davis, who was the chief negotiator of Brexit to the EU, resigned at the beginning of July. And then Boris Johnson, the old lovable fool, I put a lovable in inverted commas, then resigned not many days later. And it's looking increasingly, I say this cautiously, like it's a complete mess. Theresa May this last week and Dominic Raab, who's the new Brexit secretary, have come out and said, well, don't worry, we have enough medicine and food up for just in case Brexit goes badly. and people are turning around saying, okay, so you're saying you are preparing for the worst case scenario where we will run out of food and medicines.
Well, and, to be fair, you should always be prepared for the worst case scenario.
it's fine, but they haven't answered that question directly. They just said, don't worry, that's it. So 2 years ago, people voted for Brexit. and said that
I always vote for breakfast, by the way. just to be clear,
is that a croissant there?
I can't get them in Finland, the good ones, but I can.
But what's happening now is it seems to be falling apart. And yes, there was democratic vote, but the other thing that's also come out in the past couple of months is that vote leave have been fined and reported to the police by the Electoral Commission.
What do you mean, vote leave?
Well, the vote leave were the main people behind the leave campaign, leave the EU. Mm. There was them and
so
then
it was
another,
a group, an organization?
Organization, vote leave. They capitalized vote, capitalized leave. So it's basically saying, you know, their name was vote leave, and there were certain politicians behind it from both sides of the aisle. And then there was another one called Be Leave, and they've been fined £61,000, which is peanuts. But they've been reported to the police by the Electoral Commission for significant evidence of coordination with other groups, specifically Be Leave. It basically comes out.
How is that illegal? What's the issue there? I'm not sure I understand.
They found evidence that they spent money that wasn't declared. And okay. They've spent money in areas that wasn't specified. It's a lot of electoral law that was broken, specifically around where money has come from and who was spending it and what they were spending it on. And they weren't using it what electoral law specifies it should be used on.
Okay, so all right. So let's setting that aside. The Boris Johnson quitting was also you know after Farage leaving was like, what are you doing? But I'm guessing the country isn't happy about it.
Well, they think he's making a play for prime minister by doing this. that Theresa May is going to have there's murmurings of her being ousted in the next couple of months. But to be fair, that's been happening for the last 2 years anyway. And
imagine Boris Johnson prime minister and Trump president?
I was just doing that. It's awful.
Yeah, you see, it's so funny because Boris Johnson, when he was mayor of London, he was seen as quite a left-leaning conservative, and you know, with his Boris bikes and all these sorts of inclusive policies, etc. And he's now suddenly turned into he's almost like a Trump Jr. or Trump Light, and you know,
it's working. So
it is, yeah.
So the negotiations, they're coming to when is the end date? It's coming fairly soon, right?
Yeah, it is. I think they're looking at September at the moment.
Right.
I don't know the exact date, but we've just recently been told that what's happened is we've put a white paper forward that the EU have pretty much turned around and said, no, we can't do that. And this has been happening for 2 years now. The UK have been saying, well, we want a divorce, but we want to keep the house. We want to keep everything. And there's a common meme going around where people say, you know, I'm cancelling my subscription to this TV service, but I still want all the channels and I still want it at the same price. And, it's pretty much what's happening here. And
so let me ask you this. What is the attitude of the people who did vote leave? How are they reconciling this with their decision?
I think there's a very real feeling that Project Fear, which is what the Leave voters called the Remainers, is still going in overdrive. By Project Fear, we mean Remain people have been saying, look, if we leave, we're going to have to, you know, give up these things. We're not going to be able to get, you know, simple things like cheap French cheese. And, you know, it's simple stuff like that to having to have imports at the border, import and customs and duty, so that every truck that comes into the UK from the EU has to get searched and has to be checked. And then there's the Ireland question, which I know you spoke about on an episode previously, which is just not is not being resolved. And they're all sort of saying, well, you know, we're just Remainers or Ramonas are saying that it's Project Fear, you know, it's not going to be the end of the world, and yet the government's not stocking up food.
But they're not, they're also not, they're noting or seeing the factual thing, the fact that the government isn't managing to negotiate the leave process.
Yeah.
And I mean, the stocking up food, I mean, I don't think, you know, if there are food shortages in the country, I'm sure the EU is going to go, fine, you can have, you know, this wheat. Just, you know, eat pasta for the next 2 years. You'll be fine. But it's not wonderful, but you know what I mean. It like beyond the Project Fear aspect of it, the fact that it's not, the government isn't managing to negotiate it. Are they saying, well, it's the EU being difficult?
There's a bit of that, and what the leavers are now saying is that the government are secret remainers, and they're watching
the deal.
They're sabotaging their own deal. Because Theresa May was, she did vote, she was behind the Remain campaign prior to, you know, the vote. But she has come out and said, you know, she's coined the Brexit is Brexit, etc. It's become one of those things where nobody trusts the government now. Nobody trusts them, what they're doing. Yeah. And everyone's blaming everyone else. And it's almost causing more of an issue than... interesting, when you asked the question earlier about whether people are talking more or not, there seems to be very definite views. And I'm sure you'll get somebody responding to this saying that, you know, well, we are just making things up. And my view on remaining is exactly that. You know, we're just Project Fear, and things aren't going to be as bad as we say they are. But one thing I think that 99% of the people agree on is that the government is botching this up. They're really, really not doing a good job of it, either side of the aisle you stand on, you know. That is a big thing. And Scotland in particular, bring it down to Scotland, is very much, we voted Remain. 65% of the Scottish population voted Remain. And Nicola Sturgeon has been making moves towards the EU to say, you know what, we do want to stay, and a second Scottish referendum is on the cards. Whether we're expecting that to be announced anytime soon.
Surely the England isn't going to let you go that easily.
I think the English the
will be sentiment... glad to be rid of the Scottish.
Well, no, the sentiment I've seen amongst the people who want to leave is, if Scotland wants to stay in the EU, we can stay in the EU and go. But it's not that easy. What would have to happen in Scotland is we'd have to leave, and then leave the UK and then rejoin the EU. And it's not, you know, that's not an easy process at all. So
let me ask Tony and Bill, is that on the radar in the US at all, the Brexit kerfuffle? I mean, Trump visited the UK recently. What do you think of it? Tony, you started saying something.
Nah, it's not really something that I am all that familiar with, other than through your show. So okay, that's where my familiarity comes from.
All right, Bill, what about
I watch a lot of British TV, so it rises to the top. There's a program, The Last Leg, that reviews in a humorous way the news of the week.
I love and that show.
It is a great show. And if you can watch it. It's on, if you can get it live, it's Friday nights. But I'm kind of hip deep in this stuff.
But you're not seeing it through American media?
If you read enough news, you can find it. It's not buried, but it is not above the full headline, never. Mm.
For us, it's we don't get involved, or we don't get the details. I think Boris Johnson leaving was kind of a, all right, okay, so I guess it's the same story again. But mostly it's, the situation in the EU is that you can't facilitate things for the UK who's not managing to do things properly. And, I really don't think this is my political bias. It's just that the UK already had so many specific advantages in the EU that it didn't. And that is the fact that was lost in this whole debate, the Brexit debate. It already had special dispensations and a bunch of stuff. It was already a special case, right? And so negotiating something that would be better than this is just, you can't do it. For the EU, it's like giving bonuses, extra bonuses to the country for beating you over the head. So we can't accept it. And it's almost like we think we will survive without the UK anyway. So the sentiment is like, all right, fine, you're on your own, whatever. Just that's how it is.
Bruce, let me see if I've got this right. I think the split after with that meeting was between the soft Brexit that I believe is being promoted by the Prime Minister and the hard Brexit that Boris Johnson and others would like. But is there any sign that the EU would tolerate a soft Brexit? Soft Brexit.
I would think the EU would. I think they would, but there would need to be more concessions from the UK government on that case. It wants the soft Brexit, but as Patrick's just said, it wants to have its cake and eat it. And it's interesting I'll go back to Trump. He's been talking to the EU about an EU trade deal. He was very much, UK should leave the EU. But he's talking to the EU about a trade deal, and he's pretty much, he hasn't said it outright, but the UK is on the back burner if we leave the EU. And I still say we will not be first in line as was promised before. It's one of those things. It's the UK's thinking, we're wonderful, we're amazing, we conquered the world, and we've got all these colonies and all these things around the world that love the UK. They don't. UK by itself is a very small country with only 60 million people. So I think that reality is going to hit hard if we do eventually leave.
All right. Turkey, any opinions on Brexit? Is that something that's on your radar in Saudi Arabia?
Not much. It's mostly in the business section of the news to be covered.
Right. So it's like what business people need to know in order to make their decisions. Yeah. And it doesn't really motivate the crowds, I suppose. That's fair enough. What does motivate the crowds these days in Saudi Arabia?
Oh, let's see. In Saudi Arabia, I think for you, since the last time, no women drive in Saudi. So that's something new here.
Oh, so it's happened. Sorry, you broke up a little bit. Now it's happened. Women do drive.
Yes, women now legally drive in Saudi Arabia.
So you said it was happening too fast and it was going to be not a disaster, but it was going to create difficulties. How has it gone?
Way slower than I thought, because apparently they implemented new regulations for issuing licenses. And this is not only for women, it's for everybody. You have to go to driving school. You have to spend 40 days before you qualify to get the driver's license.
And that wasn't the case before? You didn't need to go to driving school?
No. And if you went to driving school, it could be in 2 days, one day.
Okay.
It's basically like the States in the U.S. also. It's so easy to get the driver's license if you know how to drive. So women can only go to special schools for women drivers. And there's hardly any, because they have to establish them. So there's like three in the entire country and so on. As I think for example, in Riyadh, the city of 5 million people, the population, less than 10,000 women got their licenses.
Okay, so basically they listened to you and found a way to slow things down, so you're happy. But how has it gone? Have there been incidents, or are they well accepted?
No. It went smoothly. You can see women from time to time. I've only seen one woman, and that was like 2 days ago, driving, period.
Does your wife drive?
No, because she decided to apply for the driving school only after they started driving, and there's a very, very long waiting list. So she won't be driving for another year, most likely.
Okay, so it is spreading things out. Just to be clear, the driving school requirement is for both men and women.
Yes, they have implemented that now. It also includes men, so it's just a regulation that they changed the traffic laws in general, and it covers everybody, no exceptions.
All right, so it seems it's perfect for everyone then.
Yeah, it's smooth for now. Wait and see. I've heard of some women driving, and some of them have realized the problems of driving in Riyadh. So some of them have their licenses. They don't drive. at all, or they only drive for personal reasons from time to time, but a lot of them still use chauffeurs or use Uber or whatever, taxis and so on. Because one of the biggest problems you still have in Saudi is it's a very driving-centric country, car-centric country, and we don't have any parking almost anywhere.
How does that, I guess it's because you don't have city planning, I suppose, but it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Mostly, yes. In the beginning, there wasn't much city planning, and when there was city planning, there weren't very strict regulations about how many parking you have. And there are now, but they're still not enough because, as I said, this is a car-centric country, and we don't carpool. So everybody goes with his personal car. So if you have, let's say, I think the regulation says for a business, every 50 office place buildings, every 50 meters, you have to have a single car park. But in a 50 square meters office space, you could have like 10, 20 people working in that area. And every one of them is going to bring their car. So it's a huge problem with parking. So you have parking, you have traffic problems also, and so on. And Riyadh specifically, and I think Jeddah as well, these two cities, the two biggest cities in the country, there's a lot of going on the roads. In Riyadh, we're building the metro system, and it's a huge, gigantic project, and like half of the roads are either closed or detours and so on. So traffic has increased dramatically.
But surely people understand it's necessary to build the metro system, which will make things better in the future, right?
Yes, and most people are mostly happy in a way because surprisingly this project is actually going on time. And
could you send those guys over here, please?
Yeah, I was going to say, that would be nice to get here as well.
Yeah, it's ridiculously going on time. I think one of the reasons for this is when they established this metro project, the government decided to put the entire budget for this project into a separate account in advance. So money is available immediately for this project as time passes. So they don't have to go back to the government and ask for the money and then look for it in the budget.
Mm. That sounds like a smart way of doing it.
Well, this is the first time they've ever done it, and it's been amazing.
So overall, I'm not sure I got a clear idea. It seems like this women driving thing is going well. People are okay with it.
Yeah, it's surprisingly better than I expected. I didn't expect much problems. My only real worry was how many licenses are they going to give out?
But people aren't, it's not like it sparked protests or the religious instances trying to make it, you know, to make it stop or anything like that. It doesn't seem like
Well, to be honest, I expected some protest, but I didn't expect much. Keep in mind, this is Saudi Arabia. This is a very strict, controlled country. So it's not that easy to protest in general, but overall, yeah, I think it was way smoother than I thought.
All right,
so that's a good thing. Yeah, so that's driving. Another thing is we started welcoming the pilgrims for Hajj. Hajj starts in 3 weeks, so we are expecting over 2 million people from outside the country to attend this pilgrimage
in Mecca, right?
In Mecca, yes. So it's a pilgrimage in Mecca. It starts in about 3 weeks from today, almost. And about 2 million, maybe a little more from outside the country will be attending. And about 1 million local from within the country will be attending this pilgrimage. So we've started, I think, 2 weeks ago. The first pilgrims have started arriving in the country. Other than that, I think the biggest we have one more news is apparently today, and this is going to affect everybody, including you guys, which is apparently Saudi has accused rebels in Yemen of attacking Saudi oil tankers as they cross the border, Bab al-Mandab Strait, which connects the Red Sea to the Arabian Sea, and Saudi has announced that they're going to suspend all oil tankers from using that strait for the time being. Yeah, so that expect how much does oil prices go up.
How much oil goes through that strait usually?
Just about every single oil that goes to the US or Europe.
I was going to say I'm glad I'm not driving, but actually I am now. So
that's
is that something that's expected to last for a long time, or I'm sure if that that's the way it goes, like they're going to get some help, even maybe undercover, to get that situation resolved, I'm guessing.
Well, to be honest, I would have zero idea, because Yemen, we've always had timelines and we never really stick to those timelines, so I really don't know how long this is going to take. But oil prices to go up. This was just announced today, so it's a big deal. One last article I think this you would find interesting, Patrick. Social influencer in Kuwait.
Sorry, can you repeat?
A social influencer
mm-hmm.
in Kuwait has started an outcry because she posted in, some stuff about Filipino workers. Apparently, the government of Kuwait signed an agreement with the Filipino government where new contracts have been issued for all household employees in Philippines and the Kuwait. And some of the regulations says, for example, that the employer is not allowed to take away the passport of his employee, which is a practice done by a lot of people who employ house workers, and that every house worker has to have a 1 day a week off.
That is the beginning of workers' rights. This is incredible.
And this social influencer, a lady who is into makeup, has about 2 million plus followers. She went online on her Instagram account complaining and criticizing this and demanding that this is against her rights as an employer.
I thought she was trying to push towards that, but she's protesting.
Now she went out. She said, "How dare they tell us we cannot take the passports of our employees? What, they want us to keep the passport so they can just leave anytime they want?"
She called them employees in the video.
What?
I saw.
Sorry, you broke up.
Servants. She says, "I can take our servants' passports." Yeah.
Well, don't worry about that. That's a common word used here. It doesn't really mean thing. Even people who don't believe in this stuff also use that word. So it doesn't really mean much.
All right. It's interesting. Word. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was said, "And why do they expect us to give them a day off? For God's sake, they work, they're housemates. They're supposed to be working all the time. And plus, they already have enough time off. We also take them out when we go out to restaurants and so on. They accompany us. They already have a wonderful life. Why would they need a day off?"
Okay.
So I think there's an outcry against her.
What was the reaction to this? Was it like laughing at her, or some people supporting her, or what was
definitely there were those who supported her, but the majority, there was an outcry criticizing her, attacking her. She is a makeup artist, and a lot of the makeup companies that sponsored her have put a distance between them and her now, and they cut their relationships with her. So it's the reason I bring this, even though it's in Kuwait, her mentality is very common in the GCC countries in general, whether it's in Saudi, in the UAE, or Bahrain, or Qatar, and so on. So that's why I thought it's an interesting topic.
Yeah, but it's interesting that that is her attitude, and maybe it's common. But in Kuwait, which is maybe not the least conservative country there is, the law was it's passed, right? That's what you were saying? The law has passed?
Yeah, this is not exactly from Kuwait per se, because we have that here also. But this was enforced on us by the Filipino government.
Oh, right. Okay, countries. Sorry, I misunderstood. Yeah. So the Filipino government has basically made it a condition to
allow their people to
emigrate, right?
Yeah. to travel to these countries to work. Those governments, the local governments like Kuwait government, had to sign this agreement with the Filipino government if they wanted Filipino workers.
So that's where she was coming from, going like, how can the Filipinos decide what we're going to do in our countries with our employees who happen to be Filipinos? But
yes, and how dare our government agrees to these conditions.
Okay, but she was mostly disagreed with, and the power of capitalism, meaning the brands that supported her, withdrew, so it worked.
Yep, that's basically it. But the funny part is, I think the really funny part, is she's still defending her remarks. And she's going ahead and trying to explain it in her own way. And she still thinks that she supports human rights. She still thinks she's an equal opportunity person and everything. And she's still defending herself. And she thinks she didn't say anything wrong, period.
You know, I think that part we might see equivalences all around the world towards different opinions and political affiliations. I guess it's only fair if she actually believes in what she's saying. She's not going to all of a sudden walk it back just because people say it's wrong. But I don't know. It is what it is.
Well, if she believed in something right, yeah. But if she believes something wrong, yeah, walk back on it.
No, of course, but I mean, I'm not trying to defend her, but
I know.
Anyway. All right. Well, that's really interesting. The most interesting part to me is, obviously, you know, she's a makeup artist that became big on Instagram. It's typically the kind of voice that you probably wouldn't hear if there wasn't an internet, right? If she was a political a person or a celebrity from the traditional media, you could have heard about her opinion. But in this case, as with many, many other cases, you hear about them because you hear about everyone. If there is one dissenting opinion, go ahead.
What's different here in the Middle East in general, in the region, specifically in the GCC region, media is controlled. These countries. Social media has brought out all of these social influencers who've been talking more freely than if they would be on TV. They wouldn't be able to say stuff that they're not allowed to say, and so on. So it's a huge problem in Saudi in general and the GCC countries overall. These social media influencers, they've been and they have reached a level with so many followers that they actually can spread rumors easily, even though they're not true. And that would be the popular accepted view, which is the rumor.
I wonder where I've seen that before. but I'm guessing that those also happen in every type of political opinion. So in the case of Saudi Arabia or the GCC countries, there are people that are conservative and there are people that are progressive, people who would argue for the necessity of those one day off and not holding the passport of your employee, who also have influence, correct?
Yes, true.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if there's anything to add on this from the rest of the panel. Seems pretty straightforward.
One last thing. Other than that, in Saudi, we've been spending time laughing at all of you people who are complaining about the heat in your countries.
It's 30 degrees here in Finland. This has never happened. But I heard that the predictions for the Middle East is that pretty soon, talking about climate change again, our lifetimes, it's going to be 50 degrees in the Middle Eastern region because of the way it's a very peculiar, meteorologically, a very peculiar region.
It's already become 50 degrees in Iraq and in Kuwait.
I'm guessing spikes. I'm guessing there are spikes, but it's going to become more common.
It's very common in Iraq and Kuwait.
But that wasn't the case before, or?
It's been common for the last 5-10 years.
Right. So it's a relatively, meteorologically, it's a relatively recent occurrence. All right, I guess I'm not going to complain about the 30 degrees here, although it's going to be 36 in Paris next week. And I'm like, if I was there with my 6 months old, it would be impossible. Like, already he's having trouble sleeping and is being generally fussy. But
to be fair to you guys, if it's 35 or over and you don't have AC, you can complain.
That's the thing. We don't. So, yeah. All right. Well, I think this is going to be the end of this episode. Thank you so much to all of you for being on and being willing to have an open and polite conversation, trying to influence the world through our leading example, or by leading through example. I will give each of you an opportunity to tell us where you are on the internet. And well, let's start now. Turkey, I believe you are on Twitter.
Well, as always, you can find me on Twitter as Turki Albala, TurkiAlbala.
The link will be in the show notes, as will Tony's link. You go next, Tony. Hello? Tony?
Are you muted, Tony?
I guess Tony kind of checked out when we started talking about... he did just leave the conversation at the worst time when I was saying this. He's going back. Let's include him. Okay, let's invite him back. Let's see. It's ringing.
You'll edit this out, right, Patrick?
No, I won't. This is the best part. quick, let's say things about conservatives. Let's make fun of the GOP. Oh, he's not picking back up. He called me, but he's not picking back up. How about Bruce? Tell us where you are. We can get you on the internet.
I'm on Twitter. It's Bruce Woodward 3 at... I was just seeing a message from Tony come through. You can read that. Bruce Woodward 3 on Twitter, and way too much time spent on Warcraft. But I'm telling you what server.
Fair enough. Tony is saying, just say bye for me. So unfortunately, I don't think we can make fun of the GOP because it wouldn't be fair. He can't respond. Yeah, he's typing a message. All right. Sorry, guys. You won't get... his link will be in the show notes as well, obviously. So he will be... you can reach him as you can all of us. What about you, Bill? Do you have a Twitter account or something like that?
I opened one this week, so it's got nothing there. Everyone who wants to contact me, I'm at WEBird, B-U-R-D. And please be gentle.
WEBird, B-U-R-D. I'm sure they will. They always are. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. If you want to see pictures of said little baby who is incredibly cute, you can see some of them there. If you want to check out the show, you can do that at frenchspin.com, and you can comment, and we are there to respond. And if you want to support the show, you can do so at Patreon. There's patreon.com/thephileasclub. The link is in the show notes. And you can help this show happen. If you enjoy the polite conversation, you can contribute to its happening. And we all know that this is a little bit too rare, that unfortunately, as we were saying during the episode, it seems that the owning of cons or Dems is the traditional route, and people don't talk anymore. So whatever your political leaning, I hope you appreciate the fact that we try to do that. And if you do, maybe think about supporting the show and helping us continuing to do that. That is available at patreon.com. You know how Patreon works. And as I said, the link is in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We will be back next month. And until then, have a wonderful few weeks. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.